This is the Inch Podcast. We're back, Selection Sunday. This is what we like to do. Even though we may not have the website anymore, we still like to check in at this time of the year. And we bring in a group of four of us tonight to break down the regions, talk about what we've seen so far this year, seen over the past weekend, and look forward to the NCAA tournament games. Joined tonight by College Hockey Inc., Assistant Executive Director, I think is the title.
Something like that.
He's in charge of college hockey, folks.
Except when it goes bad.
Well, it doesn't go bad too much this time of the year, so good work up to this point. Also on the call, Kevin Zeese. Hello, Kevin.
Greetings, Gladdy.
How are things?
Hey, you know, can't complain too much out here in the middle of nowhere.
All right. And, of course, it wouldn't be an Inch Podcast without Mike Eidelbus. Hello, Bus.
Good evening, or good morning, depending on where you're listening or which time you're listening. Could be afternoon, too, for all I know. Good day part.
Yes. So let's get into college hockey, and let's just start right away with let's go to the Fargo Regional. Those will be the first games to drop the puck on Friday afternoon, and what a game that is, North Dakota versus Boston University. And the second game Friday, these are Friday-Saturday games in Fargo, Minnesota Duluth versus Ohio State. I watched the NCHC championship game actually earlier today on the DVR, and it was quite a battle between North Dakota and Minnesota Duluth. A few weeks ago, North Dakota looked like they may not be in the tournament as defending national champions, but they had a great last 3 weeks and played themselves into a contention there. So, but even with all that being said, it's Minnesota Duluth that gets the trophy with the late game-winning goal. So what do we think about those teams? I've got a lot of thoughts on Duluth, but I'll open it up to you guys first. Nate, why don't we start with you?
Well, I think if you want to see the NHL Young Stars game, do they still do that? For 2 years from now, you can just watch this game.
Yeah.
The BU North Dakota. I mean, the number of supremely talented future NHL stars in this game is incredible. And it should be a great atmosphere, I think, on Friday afternoon. Odd time, Friday afternoon at 3, but that's not going to hold back the North Dakota fans. You know that. And this BU team is one that I think everybody's been waiting to see hit their potential. And it'll be interesting to see now in a do or die format if they do. And if they do, they're going to be scary good.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think that, I mean, outside of maybe a World Junior game, you're not going to see better young talent in one place than this game, which is...
It basically is a World Junior game.
It more or less is.
Yeah.
We saw half these guys in the gold medal game. And Besser wasn't there.
Yeah, exactly. You know, BU is such an interesting team because they kind of put it together and then they kind of fall apart and they kind of put it together and they kind of fall apart. And North Dakota, I think, is physically falling apart. To a certain extent, they've just been gutted by injuries. You know, just when they think they get everybody healthy, somebody else gets hurt. And it looks like they may be down a guy here coming into this weekend. But that's a fascinating game, not just because of the teams and the talent, but also the site. You know, it's a de facto North Dakota home game. Naturally, that obviously helps them out. And, you know, especially in a, you know, it's one thing to play in a cavern, like the Ralph Engelstad Arena in front of 11,000, but now you're playing in a rink of about 5,000 in Fargo. And it's going to be a heck of an environment. I think that for my money is the most interesting game, opening round game for sure, just because of, I mean, there's so much. So many question marks surrounding both teams, and if each team plays their best, I mean that's going to be a heck of a game.
What do we think about Ohio State in that second game? Kevin, you have a handle on them at all?
I do and I don't. I seem
that's
to be
a
the,
good way to put it.
No, this is it's funny. I seem to be in the only cable company in the entire state of Ohio, actually in the entire Midwest, that doesn't get the Big Ten network. So I don't actually get to see Ohio State too much. See them more on Fox Sports, but they can score. I mean, they're. I know we joke they're a lot like the Michigan teams of old, where they can score 8 or they can give up 8. You don't really know which one it's going to be on every given night. I was just looking through their stats for the season, and I knew Nick Schilke was quite the prolific scorer, but I didn't realize how many of his goals were on the power play. 16 power play goals. That's insane. So I think it'll be interesting to see them against Duluth. Glady, I know you got some thoughts on the Bulldogs.
Yeah, I mean, we did a podcast late January when we kind of had inch week of inch, and Bus and I were talking, and I left there and had a lot of good things to say. I think throughout most of the season, they were the team that has kind of impressed me most. I think the thing that, you know, you watch them, and this is a compliment, but I just imagine that in their dressing room, in their home rink, one of the walls is a giant mural of either Claude Lemieux or Brad Marchand. Because they're just miserable to play against. And every guy just has that extra, like, in your face about them. And I think that's a characteristic that really serves them well. And it will be interesting to see how the officiating standard impacts that game. What can they get away with? What can they not? And how does Ohio State handle that? We saw it in the NCHC championship. I mean, they're down 1-0 late in the first period. They've got a half a chance, a partial breakaway of sorts for Neil Pionk, and he just goes and cross-checks a goalie. and he hits a 5-minute charging major on a breakaway. So, that's the tone that was kind of set, and I think it impacted North Dakota a little bit. And then they come out for the second period, and then bang, 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 3 goals in a row for Minnesota Duluth. So I think that's just a miserable team to play against, and I like that trait about them. And they've got, you know, they've got talent, they've got veterans too. Their seniors are their best players, with the exception of probably Pionk and Tufte.
That first game has a ton of guys that are fun to watch, but Mason Yopst is hard to beat for Ohio State. He can fly and has skill and just really, really fun guy to watch.
Let's get to the other. Anything else?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I know Ohio State can go and they've scored goals in bunches and they've given up goals in bunches at the same time, but I just think it's tough to prepare for a team like Duluth that, and you think about how, North Dakota has played them, what, 6 times this year, 5 times this year, and they've lost every time.
Yeah.
And they still had trouble with them, you know, this past weekend. So for a team to go in there and play them in a one game type of scenario like this weekend will be, I think that's a tough call for Ohio State, or a tall order at least, for them to have to deal with that kind of game that that Duluth plays.
What's the toughest rink from a fan and environment standpoint in hockey these days, Nate?
Good question. Probably Lowell.
Okay.
Lowell is drawing the most.
I'm just curious how BU played there. You know, because they're going to face that that environment on Friday afternoon.
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, the point I was going to make on BU is the big thing to watch, and granted this is a cliched TV keys to the game, mm-hmm. but scoring first.
Yeah.
And the crowd is one reason, but even more important, they've been playing from behind a lot lately, and it worked against Northeastern in the quarterfinals. When they fall behind, they have such supremely skilled guys that they tend to try and do it themselves. And right. for Clayton Keller that can work a lot of the time. It almost worked against BC in the semifinals in Hockey East. But it's not the way I don't think that they want to play by any means. And when you have guys like Keller and McAvoy who are that good and try and do things on their own, it just gets – everything sort of breaks down from there. So if they can get a lead, I think it'll make a big difference.
Yeah, some of the road games for BU this year at Lowell, that was the most recent, I guess, tough challenge. That was February 10th. Lowell won 3-2, and that's because Lowell's a very good team. They split at Vermont. I'm sure the gut drew a pretty big weekend up there. They played at Michigan twice and at Denver twice. Those were both first semester series. Denver swept BU, and Michigan split with BU. So they've been on the road. I mean, that's not a concern too much. And, you know, you get guys like that. And how about the number of guys at World Junior who played a gold medal game in Canada?
You know? Yeah.
So that's a pretty tough road environment. So anyway, there's the BU thing. Let's move on to the next region, and you kind of have that another home ice scenario with Providence. These are Friday, Saturday games in Providence. Providence against Harvard, and then Air Force versus Western Michigan. Harvard's really got it going right now, and that's a team that is on fire. They're playing well. They've done it different ways. They've come back. They've run over teams, and they've got a lot of different guys who are able to score. Alex Kerfoot gets most of the attention, and he's a Hobey finalist. He's got 16 goals and 25 assists. He's tied for second on the team in scoring. Sean Malone had a big weekend at the ECAC Hockey Championships in Lake Placid. He had a hat-trick in the semifinals against Quinnipiac. He's our leading scorer. And then you throw in guys like Tyler Moy, 18 goals. Ryan Donato, 20 goals. He's the fourth leading scorer on the team with 38 points. Luke Esposito has 36 points. And then the freshman defenseman that we got to see at World Junior, and he's been great all year, is Adam Fox. He's got 31 assists from the blue line. So, go ahead.
I've seen them a couple times now, including this past weekend, and also even going back to the Beanpot. And they just they're so interesting to me. And it just seems like, you know, they're kind of going along, and then all of a sudden, boom, they got three goals.
Yeah.
In about a 5-minute span, just that explosiveness, I think, is one thing that really sets them apart from. Just about everybody else in the tournament.
And the big difference for Harvard this year is their defense. You know, they had VC last year and they could score on maybe not the same pace they have this year, but adding Fox, adding John Marino on defense, they were really, really suspect on D last year. And they've been really, really, maybe not elite, but certainly improved to a point where, it's not an issue the way it was last year.
Well, and do you think last year too, they were kind of a team that was, oh, let's wait around and have VC save us or he'll do something.
Yeah, there was a little bit of that.
They deferred a little bit to him. Yeah. Two of the games, you know, that you look at talking about this Harvard explosiveness and timing, you talked about that Beanpot final bust. BU gets two goals early in the second, they're up 2-1. And then Harvard just comes back, bang, bang, and takes a lead. So they get that done, and then I saw them at Cornell, and Cornell led 1-0 after two periods. It's their biggest game at Lina every year from the fan standpoint, and Harvard scores 4 in the third, you know, to win that. So I think there's some resilience there. I think there's some balance there, and they've got a swagger going. This is their third straight year in the tournament. In the last 2 years, they were knocked out by 4-1 scores in the opening round, including Boston. We were talking earlier before we started recording. They lost to Omaha in 2015. Of course, that was the Omaha Frozen Four year, and they just looked terrible. Like it was,
yeah, it might have been
flat out just awful day for them.
It might have been the worst game I've ever seen from a team in the NCAA tournament in my recent memory, which goes back about 15, 17, you know, in the Inch era, I guess we could say.
Yeah.
I mean, they were just, they looked like they didn't even want to be there.
Yeah.
Or that they thought that they were going to stroll out there and just walk Omaha. And when Omaha didn't, you know, just lay down their sticks at center ice.
Right.
They just kind of folded. But clearly that this team now does not have that mentality. And, you know, it'll be an interesting matchup against Providence, who, I mean, there's a lot of talent on that Providence roster, and they've been really good over the last couple of months too, if when they're not playing Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Well, and you get a team that has struggled recently in NCAA play against a team that has a lot of guys that won a title.
Yeah. Second game there, Air Force versus Western Michigan. Continue to be impressed by Western Michigan and Air Force. I mean, this is a team, you know, so many years in the past, you're like, oh, well, we'll get the Atlantic Hockey AQ, and they'll, you know, be fine. And you know, and they've won some games, those representatives, I mean, and made Frozen Fours even. But this Air Force team played its way in regardless of winning that championship with a terrific record. And now they come east where they, you know, play a lot of their hockey, most of the geography of the Atlantic Hockey, of course, in the Northeast. And go up against a Western Michigan team. So what stands out to you about those teams? Let's start with you, Nate.
You know, this is the only first-round game that is a regular season rematch. And they played two games back in November at Western Michigan. Western won the second one. The first one was a 5-5 tie, which is really uncharacteristic for Air Force, their team. I think that its strength is defense and Shane Starrett in goal. But they also have some weapons up front. And I think if they can slow Western Michigan down, especially if Western has the injury problems that have plagued them lately, then Air Force could definitely stand a chance to advance here.
Since the start of the new year, since January 1st, they've given up four goals once. Everything else, 3-2, 1-0. So that's a testament to how they turned their season around with that defensive effort. And they are, let's see here, 4-7, 12-1-1 in their last 14 games. So that's pretty hot. Air Force, Harvard, Lowell, all those teams kind of have the momentum and the hot factor, so to speak, at this time of year.
And still pretty young in a way. They don't have a big senior group.
So that's go ahead.
I was going to say the other thing about Air Force is that, you know, as we alluded to earlier about, okay, they're the Atlantic Hockey qualifier. But, I mean, they've really proven themselves in non-conference too. I mean, beyond the tie and the loss with Western, and that in the game they tied, they were losing at in the first period 4-2. I mean, usually when you think of Air Force hockey team, you don't think of them as, you know, a team that is able to kind of battle out of a. Usually when the opponent scores four, it's kind of over for them because that's not really how they're built. But they battled back to tie that game. They lost at Denver in OT. They lost at home to Denver in OT, and they beat BC in the first game of the season, and they tied Ohio State. I think that was in the icebreaker, those two games out in Denver. So, mm-hmm. So I mean, this they're a good team, and I think that you know, they've always been very good defensively, and it probably sounds cliche to say this about a service academy, but they play they typically play with a lot of discipline. But they've got some pretty good offensive balance up front. I mean, they've got a bunch of guys who are better than 20 points in a league where, you know, a lot of those teams in Atlantic Hockey are built from the goalie out, and that's, you know, it's not easy to score in that league, and Air Force has figured out a way to really find some balance up on the score sheet.
What does Western bring to the table?
Boy, that's a tough question. They do so much well, I think. I think Andy Murray's done a great job with them.
This is a team that doesn't have that, you know, hot run of recent form.
Right.
Like some of the others we mentioned, you know, they're stretched to three games. Two of those were OT games in the series against Omaha. And then they lose both games at the, I'll call it the Final Five, whatever the nacho thing is anymore. And you kind of wonder about that because it's tournament experience, you know, nonetheless. And we'll talk about that a little more when we get to probably the last game on our list here with Union and Penn State. But to me, that's kind of what's going on with Western, and the goals have dried up for them. You know, one or two goals, five of the last, four of the last five games. So that's,
and they weren't, they don't strike me as a super, they never struck me as a super high scoring team to begin with. And I think of all the teams in the field, they probably rely on individuals, maybe more than anybody. I mean, for them to win, Blacker's got to be good for them. I mean, in goal, that goes without question. Allison's got to be good for them. Dries, I can't remember how to say his name. Has got to be good for him, for good for them. And he, you know, he was one of the two guys along with Allison, I think, who didn't play last weekend. And then Iacopelli's got to be good for them as well. I mean, without contributions from a couple, if not all four of those guys, it's going to be tough for them to win.
Gladdy, with the last region, you mentioned also about the importance of getting that first goal as well to slow down the Fargo crowd as well. I think it's just as important in this region too, as I'm looking at it. Providence and Western Michigan are both 0 for the year when trailing after two periods. You know, that's something where they don't appear as though they're going to have they haven't shown the ability to come back this year. Harvard, I think, is 3-4-1 after two when trailing after two, and Air Force is actually 4-7-2. So those two teams have shown that they're not out if they're down with 20 to go, but you know, Providence is 0-6-1 after two when trailing after two, and Western is 0-10-3. So I think those teams, they have to get out in front and control the game from in front in order for them to be successful.
Yeah, they play a pro style game, both of those teams, that you know, I think favors playing with a lead. Another stat on Western: regular season non-conference games, they were 7-0-3. And they didn't play, I mean, super great teams out of the league. Ferris State sweep, Bowling Green win and tie. We talked earlier about the Air Force win and tie. Played Michigan State and Michigan Tech at the GLI, and then Arizona State. So confusing that with and that's maybe the difference in them getting in the tournament at all.
Yeah,
because you take care of those games, and then obviously your schedule is so difficult in the NCHC. They're 13-9-2 in the league, so good job by Western Michigan in that regard. Anything else on the Providence group?
I guess the one question I would have there is, of the four, and obviously we haven't gotten to all four yet, but is that the one where you think that the one seed maybe seems like the best shot of advancing?
I think they are the strongest. Maybe Denver, but
I thought them or Denver.
Yeah. I think Harvard's going to do good things here, but again, I've got trust issues with them once this tournament starts.
They've beat you before.
Well, yeah, and we saw it, you know, Kevin, when you and I were both in the league, you know, you watch them in Albany or Lake Placid, or you're like, holy mackerel, look at these guys, and then they go out and lose in the first game of the regional before the sun sets, you know, so.
Yeah.
But I've also always said that you can't hang your hat on history, because Tyler Kolarik and Noah Welch and Dove Grimet Morris aren't going to be a part of this, you know. So that's kind of what you look at. So and we talked earlier.
I know that makes you sad, Gladdy. Hopefully you'll be all right.
The latest Noah Welch update, as I'm the biggest Noah Welch fan in the world.
Do you have a Google alert for him?
I don't. I know I should. But I checked in a Hockey DB last year. He was playing for Modo in the Swedish Elite League, and they were relegated.
Oh.
So that's I didn't check this year, but that was the latest update on the great Noah Welch.
If that was junior hockey in the U.S., you would go from the Elite League to the Premier League to the Supreme League.
Super Awesome Dynamic Prospects Association. For 14-year-olds. All right. Next region up, Manchester. These are Saturday-Sunday games. Cornell versus UMass Lowell and Notre Dame versus Minnesota. I'll be honest, and before we hit recording here, UMass Lowell is one of the teams in this tournament, one of the two teams in this tournament. I didn't see them play all year. But I know, Nate, you saw them up close this weekend. And Cornell, of course, is the team I've seen the most this year. And Notre Dame, Minnesota, quite a bit because of their TV exposure. So
we'll step aside for the first game.
Well, yeah, let's get to Notre Dame, Minnesota. We'll go reverse order here. Bus, obviously, you saw Notre Dame the most.
Yes.
And what?
Probably Minnesota second most.
Yeah. Give me, for both teams, what needs to go right and what could go wrong.
Well, you know, for Minnesota, I think that I think for them it comes down to, I'm not a huge fan of their depth. You know, I think maybe you look at their top six forwards. They've been playing – they've been getting a lot of production from those guys the entire season. You know, we talked about, everybody knows Tyler Sheehy, Justin Kloos, Letary, Bristett, Pitlick, those guys, Brent Gates, who's been kind of basically his production has come on the power play, but you know, really those top five have been really good, along with Jake Bischoff on D. But once you get past those guys, there's a bit of a drop off there in terms of offensive production. And I think that then you get to the goaltending with Eric Schierhorn. He can range from very average to very good. It's the bottom six that. And maybe Minnesota's depth really gives me a reason to pause, especially against Notre Dame, which is, I think the conversation with them obviously starts with Anders Bjork, who's a Hobie finalist, and he's been terrific all year and really one of the dynamic playmakers that we've seen. All season long, he's really a special talent. But they've, Notre Dame had a portion of the season there where they had a couple key guys hurt, and Connor Hurley hasn't come back the entire season. And they had a really slick skating defenseman, Bobby Nardella, out. But other guys stepped in and filled in, and I think that really helped over the last. Quarter of the season when they had to win some games, they started to build some confidence to where, by the end of the season, they were really playing well. And obviously you've got a goalie in Cal Peterson who's if he's not an All-American, he's just a notch below that. He's had a tendency, I think, to maybe give up a soft goal here or there. So if he can eliminate that from his game this weekend, I think that, I really do like Notre Dame's chances against Minnesota because I think their depth is better and they've got better goaltending. But it's just that for whatever reason, and it's been this way for the last, I don't know how many years, Notre Dame just does not match up well with Lowell. And Lowell is playing, I think, as well as anybody in the country right now.
Boss, I was going to ask about Peterson because speaking of Lowell in that semifinal, I didn't think he was great. Not that they were his fault, but he has been hit and miss, it seems like, when I've seen him this year. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement. And if you look at his numbers, I mean, his numbers are still really good. You know, I think his save percentage is right around 930. Goals
but
against.
But when he's good, he's really good.
Yeah, when I think of him being really good, I think back to the game. I think I don't even know if it was a scoreless tie or a 1-1 tie at Denver last year. Last season when he made like 47. I mean, he was unbelievable. It was when you talk about single-handedly carrying your team. He single-handedly carried his team. For whatever reason, he's been good for about one softy a weekend. And I don't know why that is. It's oftentimes it's just what seems like a harmless shot from the point or something that somehow gets through, or maybe he doesn't pick it up and it beats him. And he's actually had a couple where he's misplayed pucks and put him right on the stick of somebody else for what amounts to an empty net goal. And I think if he can eliminate those unforced errors, so to speak, Notre Dame will have a good shot, at least in the first round. And I don't know what it is about Lowell, but they sometimes a team just has your number, and for Notre Dame, that team is Lowell.
What else do you like about Lowell, Nate?
Well, they have the best first line in the country that I've seen, and I don't even think it's close, honestly. Especially with Vecchione and Fu being split up at Union, they've got this group: C.J. Smith, Joe Gambardella, and John Edward. They all have 18 goals or more, and they work together incredibly well. Really, the entire Lowell team, and we hear over and over what a great coach Norm Bazin is, what a great coach he is. But I don't think it's articulated very well in terms of the system that they play and how they all seem to move together. And it's they attack in waves of five guys. It's almost, they compared it this weekend to a Russian five type of situation where it's unique. It's different than what you see every other team do. That goes for their whole lineup. But that first line is really, I mean, if you had a good nickname for them and a couple of NHL logos by their names on the line chart, you'd be talking about these guys with the CCM line and the CBS line and the Pacific Rim line.
Yeah, I was curious about North Dakota and Denver when you talked about first lines. I think from what we've talked about, I can say this with 100% certainty. Cornell has the best goalie at this region. I really like Mitch Gillum's game. He plays under control, and any Cornell goalie, Kevin, this, is going to get saddled with the "oh, it's a system and they're trapping," and that's not the case. He makes a lot of big saves. He made a lot of big saves against Union on Friday night in the semifinal game. And he reminds
That didn't look like a Cornell team, by the way. They were flying.
Yeah, well, I was going to say the same thing.
That's how they play now. and they're aggressive and they have been, but the narrative of Cornell slow and plotting and big ice and blah 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 goes away. I get to watch them, and one of the things to me that they've relied on, kind of that big player or big line in the past, they've got a lot of different guys who can do things. So you know, when you look at Lowell and point to the first line being so good, Cornell's probably, you know, by title, I guess, first line would be Jeff Kubiak, Anthony Angelo, and I'm blanking on the other guy.
Vanderland?
No, Vanderland's not on the line. It's Bo Sterrett. Okay. Bo Sterrett, the Chicago Blackhawks draft pick. Sterrett's actually the highest draft pick on that Cornell roster. He was third or fourth round, I think, to the Blackhawks. But Vanderland's on a different line. Jeff Molot plays on a different line. He pops in some timely goals here and there. He had the goal last night against Harvard. So those are the kinds of things that you look at with Cornell, and you're like, okay, you know, every group that comes over the boards can kind of pop one, you know, and that's obviously a nice luxury to have. They've been challenged with depth on the defense, but the six they've got going in, and they moved Alex Router back to defense, and he's helped out there. So that's a good team. I think that to me is the biggest toss up game of the first. I think both of those, this whole regional, we said maybe Harvard's the top number one seed to go through. I think this region out of any of the four is like any of these four teams can win it, to me. So,
you know, you mentioned Gillum. There's only two senior goalies of the starting goalies in this whole tournament, and the other one is whoever Ohio State starts.
Okay. So, Gillum reminds me a little bit of Ben Scriven's senior year. Gillum plays a little more. A little more stay at home. He's not as athletic, but
polite way to put it.
but he's made the big plays, and he's a guy that you know, how many of these, if you make your picks and you just pick the best goalie out of each region, you know, that's not a bad way to fill out a bracket. Anything else on these teams? I know, Bus, we really liked Minnesota earlier this year when we saw them. Just you and I, they were fun to watch and kind of liked what they were doing. But a little bit cooled on them, for me at least right now.
Yeah, same here. I think that, I mean, certainly the injuries don't help, that's for sure.
Right.
You know, losing Novak and then they lost the defenseman. Which defenseman did they lose? Was it Lindgren?
Yes.
Lindgren. Another World Junior player, I believe. I mean, those two guys are, those are big losses. You really can't overstate what they mean. You know, Novak obviously was, you know, a good scorer, but I just think Lindgren, I think that Minnesota on defense was, I think their depth was tenuous to begin with before he got hurt. And now that he's out, I think that makes it really tough for them.
Yeah. Anything else on this region, guys? Fair enough. Cincinnati is the home, illustrious, famous final Frozen Four site from the past. Michigan Tech versus Denver and Union versus Penn State. When we started Inch back in 2002, we were really setting our sights out for what we kind of wanted to do with college hockey coverage, and we knew that we were be talking about the Union versus Penn State NCAA tournament game. So, if you're buying a ticket to see any of these games, that one might be the one for me as far as what these teams are going to do. You know, there's going to be pucks on net. Both of these teams like to play it and get pucks on net. And we saw it with Princeton's teams, led by Guy Gadowski, and certainly now with Penn State making their first NCAA tournament appearance. And then you got Michigan Tech Denver. Let's start with that game, I guess. Michigan Tech and Denver. Where's Denver right now? I think they're, you know, they've been a number one team most of the year, top five team most of the year, certainly. Any reason to think that they won't advance at least through the first game? What could go wrong?
Not that I can think of, really. I mean, they're another team that comes in on a roll, and really since the first of the year, the only games they've lost, they got shut out at Western Michigan. They lost in OT to St. Cloud, and they lost 1-0 to North Dakota this past weekend, and that's it. So, 2-1 goal losses and a shutout by another NCAA tournament team. So it's, that's a pretty good resume there. And then on Saturday in the NCHC third place game, Jim Montgomery more or less rolls out the B squad. I mean, everybody was. All the big guns were in street clothes, and they still end up winning 3-1. So, and I think we maybe said this before in our last podcast, Gladdy, but they to me remind me of of the Denver championship teams of 10, 12 years ago, where they not only have the high end guys, but they've also got those depth guys who really do the little things and contribute timely goals and are good at killing penalties and are just all around solid, smart hockey players that make a difference between you being a good team and a great team. And I think Denver is, to me, they're the favorite. Obviously that's not really going out on a limb considering they're the top overall seed. But I'm sort of playing my hand here, but I think if they can play up to their capabilities and if everybody else in the tournament plays up to their capabilities, Denver wins. Mm-hmm. They're that
good. I think you hit the nail on the head there, boss, in terms of why. And it's because they have so many – they have the elite guys that you talk about, the Borgstroms that you see in GIFs and Will Butcher, who's a Hobie finalist. But when you look beyond those guys, there's so many other players. And, think about Butcher on defense, then backed up by, the Plants and the Hillmans and just all these guys that are good players that might – be stars somewhere else, but they certainly can get the job done on a team like this.
It's and I watch a lot of Denver because I went there and I worked there,
and they're on late,
which is beautiful. And you keep hearing these names. I hear Matt Van Voorhis. I'm like, how is he still in school? Tarik Hammond, how is he still in school?
You mean for grades?
Well, because they're on the. It seems like they've been there for 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, I think they played a junior with Dominic Toninato from Duluth.
Yeah, exactly. One 80s. Of those deals. Matt Marcinou. How it seems like they played with Gautier and Stastny back in the day. They've been around that long.
We wish.
They wish, but it's those kind of players I think that really set Denver apart.
Anytime you can start with Henrik Borgstrom and Troy Terry, you're starting in a good place.
Well, you got it. Yeah. Well, the other thing, if we're mentioning depth, you got to mention Luko Savages. I love that guy.
Yeah, he's a good player. Yeah, very good player. I just think that, and you look at Marcinou, a senior, he's got 10 goals. He's got 20 plus points. And he's kind of just a quiet, unsung guy out there. But, they'll put him out there in any situation. And like I said, I think that's really what sets Denver apart from everybody else, is just that mix of elite with guys who know their roles and are very good in their roles and willingly accept those roles.
Any concerns about Tanner Gillette?
None from me.
None that I've seen.
All right.
I guess maybe short. I don't want to short sell Michigan Tech because obviously they did something right.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good team that you know, we should touch on the setting of Houghton last night. That must have been awesome.
It was. I actually caught the last portion of it.
Yeah, they opened up the web feed, right? For the overtime.
Yeah, they opened up WCHA, which should, and this obviously shouldn't go unmentioned, the WCHA opened up their web feed last night once that Bowling Green Michigan Tech game got into the second overtime so people could watch. And, you know, it was a sellout in Houghton, and Houghton's kind of always, you know, a little crazy to begin with because it's in UP and that's just what happens up there. But, you know, it was, you know, a good crowd and a lot of people, and it looked like, you know, I'm sure it was a hard decision for the WCHA to make to not have a neutral site tournament. But based on the scene that I saw, it looked like it was the right decision. It was a much better atmosphere for those players.
I think they'll be trendsetters.
I do, too.
Yeah, they're doing a lot of things right out there. So, yeah, we should mention that. Tanner Gillette is sixth in the country in save percentage. The only and Cal Peterson's ninth, and Shane Sterrett from Air Force is 10th. So those are the only three top 10 save percentage guys in the tournament. So that's a pretty good place to if you're starting with Borgstrom and Terry, that's not a bad place to go after that. Second game, and I bring that up because, you know, with full respect to Michigan Tech, if Denver's in that Sunday regional final, they're going to play against some teams that are, as we said, are going to get pucks to the net and have some serious scoring options in Union versus Penn State. Mike Vecchione and Spencer Fu are two Hobie finalists from Union, and they really do a lot of big things. But when you look at that team, to me, one of the guys that doesn't maybe get enough credit, even though he does get some, is another senior, and that's defenseman Jeff Taylor. He really does a lot for them from a team standpoint, offensively. You know, if John Butchigross's favorite player, Shane Gostisbehere, is the last thing you remember about Union, Jeff Taylor's got some of those same traits for this year's Dutchman team. So there's a guy that should also be considered. And Penn State, they're youngish, obviously, and they've got high-end talent, and everybody on that team, it seems like, is getting pucks to the net, and therefore they got a lot of different guys who can score. But Smirnoff kind of stands out to me, Nate. What are your thoughts on Penn State?
I think the fact that they have a lot of different guys is what makes them dangerous. And they have that mentality of get to the net, you know, put pucks on net. But it's not just Smirnoff, it's Berger, it's Foltz, obviously, last night. Mm-hmm. It feels like Pavlichev's coming on. They're just Goodwin's a really good player. They don't have the Hobie guys or the, you know, the standout. I guess they had Petrie was an all Big Ten guy, but they don't have all Big Ten first team forwards, but they have a whole group of guys who can do it.
I think you got to give Penn State some credit too, because they got off to the terrific start and then they got into the Big Ten, started getting into Big Ten play, and they really struggled for probably a good 6 weeks or so.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't play very well. And, you know, right up till the end of the regular season, in fact. And, you know, they get into the Big Ten tournament. They beat a Michigan team that had just swept them in Ann Arbor. Then they beat Minnesota in double overtime. And then they come back and play a Wisconsin team that that obviously needed to win to get into the NCAA tournament, and they beat them in double overtime. So, you know, I think that speaks to their resilience as well. I mean, that's when you look at this, at their last 6 weeks of the regular season, and then look at what they accomplished in the Big Ten tournament. I mean, that's pretty that's a pretty solid outcome for them.
And that's tournament experience. It's not NCAA tournament experience, but those are, you know, single elimination games against teams that had a lot to play for, that you're going to get their best effort. So I think that goes a long way. When we talked earlier this season, we said we're going to find out more, you know, on schedule about two teams, Penn State and Vermont. And Vermont kind of went to where I thought they would be, back toward the middle of the Hockey East race. And Penn State also scuffled a little bit. I remember thinking I liked Penn State's team. Then I realized, and the same for Minnesota. I was like, man, I really like these two teams. But then I realized that they, I had just seen them against Michigan State and Michigan. So it was a little bit of critical thinking to dig down that next layer a little bit. So. So that's what I kind of see there. Which team of Union or Penn State would give Denver more problems?
Boy, I think you could make a case for either of them, really, which sounds like a cop-out. But, I think Union, just because of the talent that they have. I mean, granted, Denver has talent too, but those top-end Union forwards can really take over a game, regardless of what's going on.
I wonder if he thinks about reuniting those guys. They just didn't seem to have it against Cornell Friday night. It didn't seem like they were the threat that they'd been most of the year.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think one of the games that kind of stands for Union was against North Dakota. They played them. It was a strange game. It might have been January 1st.
Yeah, a day
game, or New Year's Eve even. But it was big. Obviously, the rink was sold out at Union, quite an atmosphere, and they kind of laid an egg. And Rick Bennett was very hard on his team, publicly very hard on his team after that one. And then they played much better. So I think you kind of want to
draw on that. Well, then they lost. They lost to BU later that week, when the same night that gold medal game.
Yeah, right. BU didn't have any players. Yeah.
Union against NCAA tournament teams this year was 1-5-1.
I was just gonna say that. I'm looking at their thing. I'm like, wow, geez, North Dakota, BU, Cornell, like
Harvard. Yeah.
Harvard. I mean, they really struggled, as you said, against the teams that are in the field.
Who was the one win?
Did they split with Cornell?
No, Cornell got them.
No.
Winning a tie, I think.
They beat Harvard back in January. That probably was one of Harvard's last losses there. They beat Harvard at in Schenectady, 2-1.
There you go.
Wow.
Yeah, I wonder about the depth, though, of Penn State as far as being that second game of the back-to-back. You know, Penn State played essentially four games in three nights with the two double overtime games there. So part of me wonders if that balance and being able to throw essentially four pretty even lines is more of a matchup nightmare on that second night of the NCAA tournament like this.
And also, Big Ten doesn't have that built-in bye week that many of these teams will have. That first playoff weekend, you know, good on the multiple overtime winners of Penn State and Michigan Tech to get a Saturday Sunday draw.
Yeah, that's a mean that
this is. These guys are young.
Yeah, it's just hockey.
Yeah, plenty of gas in the tank. So, I don't know. That's going back to, I think the original question was, you know, which team would match up best against Denver. I don't know how Penn State would match up against Denver. I just, you know, I think from a skill standpoint, I think it would be an easier an easier match for Union, especially if they put that line back together. I mean, that makes, I think of in that way, you probably, you might force Denver to do some things a little bit differently. But with Penn State, you know, and I think I said this before the last time we talked about Penn State, is they just seem like a kind of a straight line team. You know, they're going to skate in straight lines. They're going to shoot the puck, and there's not a lot of flash in their game. It's just kind of like get the puck, shoot, get back, straight line, shoot, get back. And I don't know how well that matches up with what Denver does.
Penn State 3-6-2 against tournament teams. So, five of those games were against Minnesota, of course. So that's what they've got. They had a very early win and tie against Notre Dame, so that was another kind of where that came from a little bit. So that's the story there. Well, we've hit all the regions. What else is on the college hockey mind?
Are you going to pick winners?
Well, yeah, we'll do predictions, I suppose.
All right.
You want to do them now, or?
No, I don't know.
Chime in on anything else. I got a stick salute I want to send out. I was at Yale and I guess Brown were scheduled to come through and play Cornell and Colgate during the regular season. I think it was early February. And the weather caused some travel problems. The weather in upstate New York was fine. It was getting off the coast from a storm that had been coming up. So the series were pushed back to Saturday, Sunday, instead of the usual Friday, Saturday. So Friday night, I was at a Division III game at Cortland, and there's a guy standing there watching wearing a Yale hockey jacket and ball cap. His son plays for Yale, and I want to say it was the Capturing the Spirit Award. You know, he had gotten his hotel, made the trip to Ithaca to see the Yale game, and ended up at Cortland against Geneseo or Fredonia or something. So that to me is the hockey story. So good on him.
Yeah, that's
capturing the spirit.
Capturing the spirit is right. We should probably shout out our other hockey champions. I believe we crowned women's champions this weekend. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, Clarkson won today.
Clarkson skunked Wisconsin today.
Yep.
3-0 to win. That's their second in 3 years, I believe. For the Clark.
It could be, yeah.
For the Clarksons.
For the Buffalo Buttes won the NWHL.
Oh, they did.
Yeah.
That was on TV, wasn't it? I missed it. And the Division III, I believe, was Plattsburgh State.
For women.
For women.
Yep. The Division III Frozen will be next weekend in Utica.
Are you going?
Not likely. Not likely.
Adrian's going to be there.
That's an upset. I would think you'd be there, Gladdy.
10-year anniversary of the last Division III Frozen Four I attended.
Oh. And they're not having a get-together there?
It worked out pretty well for the team I was affiliated with.
Yes,
yeah, 2007, Oswego State won. They did bring back the team and honored them during a regular season game. So I think it was about 17 or 18 of those guys were back in Oswego for a championship celebration. And
10-year anniversary of those guys, like 44 now?
Well, most of them came to college around age 20 or 21, so it's probably 30s. So that was a good picture to see those guys back together. Yeah, I don't know. I suppose I could head up there. I don't know if I will or won't. But
it's tough when there's a billion hockey games on that weekend.
Yeah, I saw Dave Starman. Congratulations to him and Shireen and Ben Holden and all the folks associated with their CBS Sports telecasts all year. Just fantastic to watch. But I saw Dave at the third game of Cornell Clarkson, and he asked me, you know, where I was headed this time of year for, you know, a conference tournament or regionals. And I said, you know what? I always loved covering the conference championship weekend because it's the teams you're most familiar with and the programs you're most familiar with and the people that you see throughout the year with whatever league you're covering. I said, but I always preferred for regionals to stay at home because you can watch three games if you're at a regional, or you can watch 12 games if you're home on TV. And
yep,
that to me is kind of what I would probably opt for next weekend as well.
Especially that Saturday.
Yeah, that, you know, Saturday.
The
six is
game
great.
Saturday, yeah. Yeah.
You know, I may watch a Friday
game. And by the way, people gripe about attendance. That might be a reason.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
No. I'm not griping about attendance.
No. I get so furious, not furious, I suppose. I get just annoyed when I see
fed up.
I'm watching this game on TV and the attendance is terrible. Well, do something about it, guy. Go to the game. So
watch the play on the ice.
Yeah,
it's pretty good.
That's
usually pretty good.
That's the bigger point.
Yeah, I've had that retort many times. You can worry about the 2,100 people in the crowd. I'll watch the 39 guys on the ice or 38 guys on the ice.
You know, I was going to bring up an attendance thing, and not to belabor the point, but I think that, you know, if you look at the – obviously Fargo's attendance will be fine. I would assume it's going to be fine in Providence.
Yeah.
I don't know how Harvard travels, probably not very well.
It doesn't.
Providence, what will Providence bring? Okay.
You know, Providence's home rink is a 2,000 seat rink.
Yeah.
And they're going to play in the AHL building.
Up in Manchester, you've got Lowell there, so
they'll travel well.
Yeah,
they travel very well. And Cornell's there.
Cornell's there.
Yeah. Notre Dame's there. They've got fans all over the world.
No, they don't.
No, they don't. No, only they have football fans all over the world.
They have football fans all over the world. There you go. Yeah.
But then you go to the NCAA basketball regional in Buffalo, and there's 25 Notre Dame fans there, and they're all sitting behind the bench. But anyway, yeah, basically. But I was wondering about Cincinnati, and you know, the wild card in there is Penn State because we've never seen them travel before.
I think they'll do well.
I do too, because based on what I saw on Twitter last night during the Big Ten championship game, it sounded like a few Penn State people made the trip in just for that game. And, you know, there were – I don't know what actual crowd number was, but it was listed at about 5,000 and the change.
I was told that Saturday was by far the best day in terms of atmosphere.
And,
well,
so,
and
I mean,
and
I think
with Penn State, though, getting to Cincinnati from State College is not exactly difficult either. So,
and you've got all the alumni that are based in the western part of the state. That
yes,
even,
absolutely. You're only looking a 3-4 hour drive for a sizable portion of their fan base.
Right.
So I would think they'd do okay, and that's a Saturday Sunday, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So there's a good chance they could have a decent showing there. And I'm sure that there's Penn State people, obviously, in Western Ohio, and
yeah,
you know, yeah. They don't make them stay in Pennsylvania, do they?
No.
They didn't build a wall.
No, not yet. Not yet. So, states' rights, though, man. Let's get to the predictions part of this.
Actually, there's one more thing I don't know if you want to talk about. We've got a handful of coaching jobs open.
Yeah. It's, you know, you get so much speculation about the tournament from reading, you know, a simple graph of results compilation. what are we hearing about some of these positions? Rensselaer is the one that I've heard the most about, and it's former player Ben Barr. Is supposed to be highly thought of or regarded. I think he's on the UMass staff right now.
Yes.
Dean Blaze stepped down at Omaha, so there's a job in a tough league for sure. And a program that has put some resources into it. That's probably an attractive opportunity for a lot of guys. It was at Niagara, I believe.
Yes.
With Dave Burton.
Niagara and Northern Michigan.
Northern Michigan, okay.
Yeah.
So
four jobs out there, and, you know, I think there's, you know, who knows what's going to happen at Michigan. It seems like a foregone conclusion, I would say, but that they're going to be hiring somebody.
Would have said that 365 days ago, too.
Well, yeah, there's that. Probably would have been the better move at that point. But so we've got some schools out there looking for that are looking for head coaches.
Well, hopefully the opportunity is the right one for the right fit. I think so much of college hockey is based on, you know, on fit and comfort, and as administrations change, you know, kind of things can happen that way too. So it's a complete effort from top down. And you saw that especially with Providence when they won the national title 2 years ago. You know, the athletic director, the head coach, everything was very closely aligned. So
yeah.
So that was that. All right, predictions times. You want to go? Let's just go one at a time. Nate, are you comfortable doing this or not?
Sure.
All right.
We're like an hour in. Nobody's listening anyway.
No, everybody fast forwards and looks for.
Yeah.
How do we sound on 1.5 speed?
Yeah. Picks.
Are we doing Frozens or one winner or what do you want?
Let's pick a winner from each region, and we'll just go all four at a time, not just paying the board. So we'll start with Nate. You want to start?
Yeah, give me Denver, Lowell, Harvard, and North Dakota.
Okay, that's the Nate Ewell bracket. And the semifinals are going to be the Manchester and Providence groups. Will be in one semi.
No, I think isn't it Cincy against Manchester?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, my bad.
Because Denver's the one.
Okay. I was looking at the, yeah, you're right. So the Saturday-Sunday winners will go in one semi, and the Friday-Saturday regions will go in the other semi. Okay, so Nate had Denver, Lowell, Harvard, North Dakota. Pretty chalky, but that's how the
there's only 16 teams to pick from.
That's how the teams got to be top seeds, by being good teams.
Yeah.
Kevin?
I'm going to sound an awful lot like Nate here and say Denver and Lowell on the left side of the NCAA bracket that I'm looking at. The other side, though, I'm going to go very off with him. Break your heart. Providence and Minnesota Duluth. Providence knocking out Harvard.
Yep, that'll do that.
It's the only way they can get there.
There's just one road into this town. Bus, what are we thinking?
I mean, before I pick, can I say that I can't remember what I say from year to year, but to this, for some reason, this season more so than any, and this bracket seemed, you know, I can look up and down and you know, look at maybe 12 or 13 teams and say, yeah, I could see them getting to the Frozen, or I could see, you know, to me, it seems as wide open as maybe any bracket that we've seen recently.
Yeah.
But that said, I like Denver to come out of Cincinnati, and I think Lowell, is going to come out in Manchester. I think North Dakota finds a way in Fargo, and especially if they play Duluth in that regional game, you know, you're talking about having to beat the same team.
Hard to beat the same team six times.
Yeah, can't beat the same team, especially if they get a 2-goal lead on them, because that's the most dangerous lead.
Oh, right, right.
I'm gonna go with Providence. Although I really wanted to pick Air Force just because of the Steve Miller factor that every team he is associated with ends up in a Frozen Four.
Killer.
So
he's a killer.
He's the Phil Jackson of college hockey. So, but yeah, I think I just think Providence is. I'm gonna go with Providence.
All right. Well, Denver and Lowell were unanimous picks from the three previous panelists. I'll keep that for Denver and call it familiarity bias, because that's exactly what it is. I haven't seen Lowell play all year. I've seen Cornell play an awful lot all year. I think Cornell wins that game, and I think they win the second game. I'll go with Cornell there. And give me Western Michigan out of the Providence group. And
if they're healthy, I don't think that's a bad pick.
And I'll go Minnesota Duluth.
You're begrudgingly becoming enamored with Minnesota Duluth.
I think they are just awesome. Like, they have, like, out of all the teams I've seen, they have, like, it, you know? And I think there's a lot to be said about that. One of the things that I've, you know, noted to bring up on the podcast here, there have been six different champions the last 6 years. You go back to Duluth's title in St. Paul, and then you had Boston College in Tampa, Yale in Union, and then Providence in North Dakota. Four of those teams are in this field. Here's the next question. Will one of those, if I gave you those four teams or the field, who would you take? So you got Duluth, Union, Providence, and North Dakota to win the championship.
Field.
Denver's in the field, so I'm taking field.
Okay.
Lowell's in the field. I'm taking the field.
Yeah.
So are those your championship picks? Bus Denver, Nate Lowell?
Yep.
I think they're the two teams that are playing the best right now. I don't know if I would...
Yeah, Harvard.
Along with Harvard. So, I mean...
And Harvard's also in the field. I mean, I just think there's so many teams out there that you look at and you think, man, it's going to be hard to beat this team. And certainly Duluth's in that group. But there are a bunch of teams that are just really tough outs.
I don't think we've given BU enough credit. I mean, that's a loaded region. That's a loaded region.
If they play to their capability, man.
I know. I think, that's the other part of this. Which team is going to find it? You know, you got to win four games here. And it's 60 good minutes and maybe one goal post and one big save, and it changes everything. You don't get that cushion of the three-game series on home ice. It's a lot of uncertainty and X factors, which is, I think, why you kind of look at recent form. And, it's a tough one. It's a tough one. But certainly, yeah, this year, I as you said, Bus, I could see maybe 13 teams that I could make a strong case for winning their opening round game. So that's that. Well, that'll do it. Why don't we wrap this up here? Not a lot of deterioration. Anything else just in the world?
Let's not talk about the world.
Yeah, that's why we're having this podcast.
Did these teams punch their tickets?
No, they had a scan.
Are they Cinderellas?
Are they going to dance?
Are they going to the dance? Yeah. So, March cliches in sports media are just the worst. That's why I've been watching the World Baseball Classic.
Did you reiterate your sports media?
Yeah, I think that. I realized the last couple of weeks. I think that the sports in March are just fantastic and exciting and awesome. But I think the way that sports are covered in March by the media in general are just, I think there's a lot missing. And it's probably the consumer's fault. I mean, readers, listeners should probably demand better. And I think that was something that we tried to do with our coverage at Inch, you know, over the years, was tell you about the teams, what happened and what's going to happen with the hockey. Instead of all the other drivel that you get about coaching cliches and pairwise this and that, and the math played out again this year. The pairwise is just winning percentage. It's just flat-out winning percentage. If you look at that, you're going to figure out who's in the field. If you played Arizona State 35 times and you went 28-7, guess what? You're going to be in the field. So just win your games, man. Win your games.
8 of the 10 at-large, to your point, 8 of the 10 at-large picks would have been determined if you just went straight winning percentage.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
We could have saved a lot of cyber ink by just pointing that out. Just think of how many cyber trees would still be standing if we had figured that out previously. So many electrons and ones and zeros just wasted.
Get the EPA to look into that while they still exist.
Exactly. I'm going to start a ones and zeros dump. Get rich. Get rich off it.
This podcast was brought to you by the National Council for the Arts.
We blew our grant in one place. On four headsets. Hey.
Got a score update for you, Gladdy. Flames out of town 2, scores. Kings 1. End out of the first scores. Here. And it's good. It's the free game on NHL TV right now. So.
All right.
There we go. I know what I'm doing next.
Yeah.
I have
come
a
on, update Flames.
Flames have been coming on. Where have you been?
I know.
That Johnny Gaudreau, he's... Not
there's curling on right now too. Tonight. Anybody have any curling scores?
I have a score in the Battle of Ontario, Quebec. I've got Montreal and Ottawa, and Montreal's winning 4-1. But Torrey Mitchell was just in a fight.
Ooh. With go Chris Cats Neal. Go.
With Chris Neal.
There you go.
Things getting feisty yet, and they also have. Sportsnet, bless them, has shown numerous crowd shots that have included Youppi.
Youppi's back! Youppi's back!
Not to be confused with the Michigan Tech fans.
Right.
Yes. Youppi and Youppi. Do you think Youppi was named after the Upper Peninsula? Probably not.
They should bring him in for a visit, though, don't you think?
Yeah. Like,
come to Cincy this weekend, Youppi.
Michigan Tech, you know, Northern Michigan or Lake State Northern, something like that.
Youppi. Come see Youppi.
That'd be good. Out-of-town scores from the lacrosse field. from the shoe, Kevin. 17th-ranked Ohio State put it on number one Denver today. Won by 9 goals. Everyone's getting free tattoos.
Wow.
So.
Unpredictable year in college lacrosse.
Well, Syracuse is 6-1, so I don't know how that's unpredictable. Bah.
Speaking of NCAA violations.
Those are smart kids. I was at Syracuse, Virginia a couple weeks ago. They had a commercial segment, you know, in between quarters that played on the video board of one of the players, you know, interviewing the other player, and it was something else.
It was something.
Yeah. So that was.
Are those Syracuse players, are they majoring in African-American studies?
No. No. Maybe Native American studies.
That would be North Carolina.
Yeah. What about, the time machine of going to the game where they're touting their throwback uniforms and they were the uniforms they wore when you were in college there? That's, welcome to the 40s, Gladdy. Welcome to the 40s. So that was fun. It was a great game though. So I was happy to go. Anything else?
Are we gonna start doing lacrosse podcasts now?
I don't think so.
Oh, good.
What are we gonna do? We want to do another podcast before the Frozen, maybe?
Sure. Why not?
All the people.
After all of our picks have proven to be complete and utter folly.
Sure. Yeah, I used a pen and wrote these down. So, you know what, boss? When we did, we kind of threw that around in the January podcast, right? I think we put a Frozen Four picks of sorts.
Yeah, I think we did too. Yeah. Because I think we both liked Minnesota.
Yeah, and I was all over Duluth. I still am all over Duluth, and I think I had Denver, and I said one of Cornell and Harvard, or one of Cornell and Union. So
yeah, I think that sounds right. I don't remember who my fourth one was.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll go back and look that up. Okay, listeners, if you want to hear another podcast before the Frozen Four, give us some feedback. If you don't want to ever hear a podcast, also give us some feedback. You can tweet at Inch. Buss will collect those.
Yep. If you're not listening, then don't bother.
Yeah.
And,
go away.
You can find me on Twitter at @Inch_Gladdy, GLADDY. Nate's at Nate Ewell, right?
At Nate Ewell, and you should probably also follow at College Hockey.
Yes.
Yeah, that seems.
So that's good.
And retweet stuff. My job depends on it.
Sounds good. I liked your infographics for each of the conference tournaments. That was good.
Thank you. I'll send you the Bowling Green one and Boston College one. And...
Sounds good.
I thought those always got sent to kids in, like, Africa.
The ones and zeros dump. Buss, your first customer is College Hockey Inc. Buss.
Hey, I've got this Bills championship T-shirt and an NCAA tournament tweet about Bowling Green.
Of course, if you missed our last podcast, that was last week about the history of Dartmouth in the NCAA tournament. Wait a minute. That edition does not exist because that subject does not exist. So there is there's that. Let's call it a day. Thanks for listening. We'll probably have another chatter before the Frozen and certainly after the Frozen. So thanks for checking in with us. Hopefully it got you through some time at work, and we'll talk to you soon. This is the Bend the Inch podcast.